Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Just ahead, David Letterman, Jay Leno, step over. There's a new late-night talk show coming to television with a twist. Más vale tarde on Telemundo. We'll tell you about it in English. That's coming up. But first, we talked earlier in this program about the things that are bringing us together and the things that drive us apart. Earlier this week, the Los Angeles Times opinion page asked several writers to give their perspective about the relationship between blacks and Latinos in Los Angeles. They published five pieces last Sunday that documented wildly varying experiences, ranging from unease and violence to sympathy and cooperation between the two groups. We wanted to hear more about this, so with us now are two of the writers. Gustavo Arellano is a regular contributor to our program. He's the author of the column and book Ask a Mexican. He joined us by phone from San Diego. And Erin Aubrey Kaplan is a contributing editor to the Los Angeles Times opinion page. She joins us now from NPR West. Welcome to you both.
Hola, thanks.
It's a pleasure to be on.
Erin, let me start with you. You wrote that black people are tired of being conflated with Latinos as poor people in the same boat, navigating the same rough waters of ghetto deprivation, traveling a similar historical arc up to and including their immigration to Southern California, seeking respite from an oppressive life. Kind of strong words. Why did you want to write that?
I just wanted to make a distinction between the experiences of blacks and Latinos. We are very focused on what the similarities are right now, and that's understandable. But there's also a difference that we have to talk about before we can talk about any kind of collaboration. And I just wanted to point out that the black experience and the black sort of expectations socially and economically and politically are different from that of most other groups.
So you think this whole, like, people of color label that has become very common these days, you think that that's masking something very important?
I do think so. And I think we get a lot of talk about sort of living in a post-racial society, and that would be wonderful. That's ideal, but that is just not the case. There are a lot of racial issues we have not resolved, and racial issues that are specific to black folks.
Gustavo, you wrote, black-brown tensions are simultaneously overplayed and understated, and you go on to talk about this with an anecdote from your own life. Will you tell us that story?
One of the most embarrassing moments of my life. I was introduced by a friend of mine to an African-American journalist who I had long, long admired. So when we go to the introductions, I try to give him a soul shake, you know, to do the two or three little shakes before you hit each other on the fists. And when I tried doing that, the guy, he just went for a normal handshake, and we looked at each other, and it was both like, uh-oh, Gustavo, you did something wrong. And then afterwards...
And was the black guy irritated?
No, well, he
tell the
was
truth.
Surprised. I wouldn't say irritated, but he was surprised that I would go for a shake like that. And then afterwards, you know, my friend's like, why are you doing that? Why are you assuming that, you know, all black people are going to shake hands like that? And in my mind, I'm like, you know, it's right. And in a way, that's how I grew up, and, you know, the body of where I grew up, that's how we all shook hands. And I assumed, you know, it's interesting to what Erin says. I assumed that, you know, African-Americans, they'd also have the similar experience to myself. Therefore, when we would greet each other cordially or, you know, as friends, that we would do that same handshake. And to me, it really illustrates what's going on between in the tensions between African-Americans and Latinos. In the way it's understood, it's just people that Latinos, especially specifically people from Mexico, there's not that many Afro-Mexicans. And so we don't deal with the day-to-day interactions. But when you bring those prejudices up here to the United States, there's also going to be more misunderstandings exacerbated by our own Mexican upbringing.
The immediate sort of spark for the series of pieces was that there have been incidents in Los Angeles. There have been some gang-related incidents that have gotten a lot of attention, including both groups. But do you think it goes beyond that? I mean, clearly you all are both writers. It's part of your job to kind of explicate kind of the cultural experience. But I want to ask you both, do you think that kind of the black-brown dynamic is one that needs to be discussed more? And do you think that there is, in fact, more tension there overall, apart from the gang experience, that isn't being talked about? Erin?
I think there is more tension. There is the tension at sort of the other end of the spectrum. In politics, for example, there's a lot of sort of infighting in, you know, in City Hall and elsewhere about power sharing, you know, and about who's going to take what spot. But there's a huge middle group, like just people living day to day, who have gotten along, quote unquote, for many, many years. As a friend of mine pointed out, you know, people in L.A. and probably most big cities, they coexist pretty well. I live in a neighborhood that is actually changing from black to brown. And for the most part, the vast majority of people are coexisting just fine.
Gustavo, what do you think?
I think in the terms of broader issues, no. The big issue to me is that there is a demographics change, as Erin pointed out. Latinos are assuming the position in Los Angeles as sort of the dominant minority, not just in terms of numbers, but in terms of people being elected to office. And it's inevitable that there's going to be tension. There's been tensions throughout the foundation of this country when it comes to different immigrant groups mixing. One thing that I do try to point out in my column and in my writings is that Mexican immigrants, they are coming with a preconceived notion of what an African-American is. In popular culture in Mexico, whenever there are depictions of people of African descent, they're always as the darkies, as the coon, you know, caricature, dancing, shucking, and jiving all the time. So when they bring those stereotypes up here to the United States, I think that's where not only is there going to be misunderstandings, but that's where a lot of these gangbangers, a lot of these people who do try to be prejudiced against African-Americans, they're drawing from their own culture to justify their prejudices.
You know, I was going to point out that one of the other pieces in the series points out that there was a camaraderie in the past between leaders like Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to that? Do you feel, you
well,
know,
you know,
and I mean
that
the Black Caucus, the Black and Latino, the Black and Congressional Hispanic Caucus mm-hmm. are very closely aligned on a lot of issues. So what do you think is missing as a way to discuss these issues? Is it that there doesn't seem to be a way for Black folks to talk about their grievances without being aligned with people who they consider racist? Or
that was a very different time, of course. And there was a clear and presumed Black agenda that King was working from. And when you have that, you can, you know, reach out to other folks, and it's not threatening. But now we don't, Black people and the Black political leadership or any leadership does not have that agenda. It is not clear. So collaboration is much more muddy. And even though politically Blacks and Latinos are aligned, you're right, on many political issues, those issues are not connecting to the people in the street, to, you know, to everyday concerns.
But forgive me, Erin, is it perhaps that African Americans are acting like any other established group with advantages, is that they don't want to give up any advantages, or that they feel that, you know, whatever their piece of the pie is,
yeah,
they don't want to share it.
Right. Well, you know, I think it's a little more complicated than that. I don't know if I'd call it an advantage. Certainly a piece of the pie. And certainly they feel very threatened simply because their number, you know, we don't have as many elected officials. Our numbers are going down, you know, in a government. And that, you know, because we don't have a lot of advantages, that feels very threatening. Just the fact that we are getting fewer and fewer.
In Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles and, you know, in the whole state of California.
Erin, what would you like to see happen? You talked about the way that there's really no comfortable way to talk about these things without, mm-hmm. what, you know, I don't know, getting everybody all worked up or, you
right.
know. What would you want to have happen? How do you talk about things like this in a way that's actually productive? I mean, who should be in charge of that? Who should do that?
Oh, we should just point a czar to deal with that kind of thing. I really don't know, Michelle. It's I think we have lost the language of racial justice. We don't talk in those terms anymore. We talk about economic justice, if we talk about that at all. The problem now is that when Black people talk about what they need, people immediately, we don't like to talk about race anyway, and we have been moving away from that. So it's very, very difficult for Black people anywhere, political folks or folks in the street, just to talk about a quote-unquote Black agenda and what those issues are, because people just don't want to talk about it anymore, and they don't really want to address it. They'd rather talk about it in some other way. So there's that's, to me, the biggest tension, not just in L.A., but nationally. How do we, or do we even want to talk about what's wrong with Black America?
Gustavo, what do you think? What would you like to do differently? Or do you feel maybe just this problem works itself out
as people just spend more time together? Yeah, I'm an optimist. I do think things are going to work out. It's always worked out in the past between groups. In some cases, groups that didn't even speak English as a first language. You would have Italians versus Poles, you know, duking it out on the streets of New York or Chicago. And it's going to happen. It's just inevitable. And again, I would really put the onus on Latinos, on specifically people of Mexican descent, to agree that there is something inherent in Mexican culture that would make us predisposed to being a bit prejudiced against African Americans. Once we're able to accept that, then from there we could, you know, we could start the conversation. And when I bring up that point, I get a lot of complaints from you know, Mexican American activists who say, "Why are you calling Mexicans racist? You know, it's not our problem that that's happening." And I said, "No, it is our problem. Just examine Mexican culture and you really accept that there is a problem. Once we can deal with that, then I think we could really start having a discussion."
Gustavo Arellano is a regular contributor to our program. He is author of the column and book, Ask a Mexican. He joined us by phone from San Diego. And Erin Aubrey Kaplan is a contributing editor to the Los Angeles Times opinion page. She spoke to us from NPR West. Gustavo, Erin, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thanks as always, Michelle.
Thank you, Michelle.